All right. Good morning, Anita. How are you?
I am fabulous, Lena. How are you?
Yeah, good. It's nice and cooling down outside, so it's
It's
lovely.
Melbourne.
Yeah, it's
It's
great.
Melbourne.
So welcome. You're like a confidence expert slash confidencehackers.com person. So you help people coming in their confidence. Your beautiful quote on like how we can tap into and use confidence we didn't know we had to do stuff we didn't know we could do. So yeah, do you want to introduce yourself, what you're doing, and yeah,
And go from there,
and go
sure.
from there.
So my name is Anita Van Rooy, and I'm a confidence coach and human behavior expert, and the founder of confidencehackers.com, and anitavanrooyen.com, and about five other different websites that I have as well. And I am passionate about helping people to build their confidence so that they can do stuff that they didn't even know that they could.
Amazing. And how do you do this?
Well, if only there was like the magic wand of the fairy that could just go ding and the confidence fairy came along and sort of tapped you on the head. And it's really interesting because I used to be the shyest person in the universe. Too shy to put my hand up in class, too shy to kind of make friends a lot of times. And so through time, I kind of had this epiphany one day. My dad and my sister, both very outgoing people, and I remember one day I had this like epiphany. It was like a bolt of lightning out of the sky. And it was, if you don't do something different, like you're always going to be this way. And that means that you miss out on other people, but also that other people miss out on you because you might actually have something really interesting or important or useful to say. And by not saying anything, then other people could also be missing out on that. On whatever that gem is that that may be kind of stuck inside of you. So over a number of years, a lot of years, I did what I now call the cha-cha of personal development, which is, you do something and it takes you two steps forward and you try something else and it takes you two steps back and forward, backwards, forwards, backwards. And there was slow progress. But it was really slow. And so there was, some stuff that worked, a whole lot of stuff that didn't really work. And I think for the most part, it was because I had these really strong beliefs about myself and what I thought I could achieve and what I thought I could do and all that kind of stuff. And as soon as I started managing and dealing with those in a different way, then it was kind of like the world just sort of started opening up to me, which was perhaps more like I was opening up to the world.
So
So
how
there
did you
wasn't
start?
really, there wasn't really a magic drop, pin drop or anything. But one of the things I remember, which was really, really, really powerful for me, was starting to have conversations with people that I thought I would probably never ever see again. So it meant that it sort of took all of the risk and the threat and the fear out of it. So started having conversations like with people at the supermarket at the checkout in the queue. Figured that I probably wouldn't get to see them potentially in my life again, or maybe if you did, but like it wasn't a big deal. And would try and start a conversation about anything. So it might be, I remember one time there was someone in the line at the supermarket checkout, and they had a whole trolley of water and Coke. That was it. Like the whole trolley was full of bottles of water and Coke. And I just said to them, "Man, you must be really thirsty." And it just started this silly conversation But it got me to realize that most people actually really wanted to have conversation and wanted to have a chat, and not everybody, but most. And it really helped me to learn to identify those people who were open to a chat and the ones that weren't open to a chat by literally trying, by literally giving it a go. And that was something that was really surprising to me, that they wanted, that so many people wanted to have conversations. But also it surprised me that I could actually do it, because I had this belief that I couldn't. And that sort of grew this whole thing that I use now that I call a courage bucket, which is all about, you know, I was there for years and years and years waiting for the confidence fairy to like ding on my head with the magic confidence wand, not realizing that what I needed first was courage. That moment of courage to take that first step, to say that word, to take the chance, to do all that kind of stuff. And that has been absolutely life-changing for me. And now I help other people with that kind of process as well, and really life-changing for them as well.
So this kind of small conversation helped you pretty much, like having the courage talking to strangers, literally boosted your confidence on doing things. Is that correct?
Yeah, because in order for me to start a conversation, I had to get myself to a place where I could access courage that I already had. Yeah. And I'd had experiences before of being courageous, even if that courage was only like a 5% increase on what I normally, you know, was normal me. But I'd had experience, and we all have, of moments in our life when we've been courageous. And tapping into those moments, remembering them, remembering the feelings that they bring to us, even remembering where in our body it is that we feel courage, can help us then to access more of that courage to be able to take that first little step. And it doesn't have to be, you know, this giant, giant leap. It is that whole, you know, my cat's going to just knock something down. It doesn't have to be, you know, this giant, giant leap that we take. It is those little tiny incremental steps towards the person that we want to be. Towards the person that we want to be. And it's taking those small steps rather than thinking, oh my God, unless I'm doing something enormous, that why even bother?
So for you, it was literally like this talking with people to boost your courage, like your confidence. But I guess there are also things like something comes to your mind and you're like, okay, I want to do this, which doesn't necessarily has to do with talking to someone, but like with literally starting doing something towards what's coming to your mind, what you want to do.
It's, and you can use the same process. It's, if there's something that you want to do that you're stopping yourself from doing, it's remembering to take that moment of, you know, finding where your courage is, because everything that we do, any step forward that we take, requires courage. Courage comes first and then confidence comes afterwards. So the courage to start a conversation, or the courage to take the first step towards whatever goal it is that you want to do, builds the confidence to keep going and builds that inspiration and that motivation. And that was the bit that I was missing. I didn't know that, you know, if once you build your courage to take those steps, it moves into confidence, because, well, now I'm doing something, and the confidence comes from taking the action, not just waiting for the fairy to come along and ding you on the head.
So how has your life changed now since you have a lot more confidence than maybe years ago.
Well, let's just say it feels like that version of Anita is somebody that I know, but like she just feels like someone that's from my past.
Mm-hmm.
So even like just thinking about my business, before I started going down this, you know, adventure of finding courage and confidence, I left a job. I was made redundant from a job, got a golden handshake payout, and decided that I wanted to start my own business. And I had this great idea for this business, homemade biscuits, because I love baking. And so had this idea for this business and got very, very, very busy in, you know, doing a logo and finding pricing and researching and all of these things, everything except actually going and talking to customers. Everything except actually taking those steps that would be outside of my comfort zone, like not even half a step. And I remember through a friend of a friend, I got my first order for something to make, and I made it and I dropped it off to them, and I was so excited, and I never contacted them again. Because I was so frightened that maybe they didn't like it, maybe it didn't go down well, maybe. I had all the maybes, all the what ifs, all this stuff. And all of that stuff doesn't give you energy and motivation. It spirals you down, right? Mm-hmm. The more what ifs, it's a vortex. And so that business just fizzled out. It never grew any legs. It never had the courage and the confidence to move forward at all. So I went and got myself, you know, a real job. And it was kind of this really sort of sad moment for me, because I knew that the idea was really good. I just knew that I didn't know how to, or didn't have the courage and the confidence to execute it. And so it just sort of frittered away, and as I said, got myself a real job. And so then years later, when I retrained as, you know, in human behavior to understand, you know, what goes on in between our ears, what our thinking means, how we can impact that, how that thinking impacts what we do, I started initially with that sort of, in that space of, oh my God, I'll be able to help this person and this person and this person and this person, and this person. And I could, and I did. And it was only probably then, maybe a couple of years later, that it was like, yeah, actually I need to turn that spotlight that I'm putting on everybody else, how I can help everybody else. And maybe it's time to turn that onto me. Because mm-hmm. if I want my business to actually impact people and have, you know, and help them in the way that I know that I can, I need to turn the spotlight onto myself to be able to create the outcomes that I want so that I can help them have the outcomes that they want. But it has to start with me. And so that was when, you know, I started getting coaching myself. I'm a coach, but I have a coach, because I know how much BS we tell ourselves and how little BS it is that a coach will take. A good coach, yeah? A good coach won't allow you to sit and stay in your own BS world. They are like, let's get real answers. Let's get real. Let's get truthful about what's actually going on for you. And so from that, putting this spotlight back onto myself of, you know, what can I do to build my courage, to build my confidence, to change my thinking and my beliefs about myself? Because it was kind of like I was, have you ever tried to run up a down escalator? Yeah. So, you know, like when the escalator is going down, you're trying to run up it.
Yeah.
And it's exhausting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even if you get to the top, like that last leap that you have to make feels like it's just enormous to get off this treadmill and jump off to the, you know, the higher end. And all of the beliefs that I had about myself, the self-talk, the negative stuff, the constant berating of myself, it felt like I was trying to run up the down escalator all the time. Mm-hmm. And the more it was going on in my head, that was like the faster the down escalator was going, the faster I had to run, the more tired I became. And so I realized that I kind of had two choices. I could either learn to run faster and faster for longer and longer and longer, or I could get smart and slow the escalator down so that then I didn't have to expend so much energy overcoming all of that negative self-talk and beliefs and all that kind of stuff. And that was the way that I chose to slow that down. And since then, my business has grown. The impact that I'm having has grown. It has totally transformed my business outcomes, but also the outcomes as far as friendships. And, you know, like I started learning Latin dance, which I had wanted to do for ages and ages and ages and just never did. And then when I started learning dance, then built the courage to go out social dancing, and then built the courage to ask people to dance. And so it was just this continual kind of process of learning and evolving that, yeah, just totally, totally changed my life. Like I said, I look back at the version of me that I was, and I love her and I'm very proud of her and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But she also feels like, you know, a really long way away from where I am now.
And how did you realize this, that you didn't want to be this version anymore? You know, like what, and also what would you say? Do you think you were holding back from all of this because it's kind of whatever the program you were running? Like, where would you?
I think, you know, I mean, did as you... I said, like my dad and my sister, very confident, very out there, could talk to anybody. My mum and I, super the opposite, super shy, super introverted, super, you know, I remember going to family events, you know, like first cousins and aunties and uncles and stuff, and sitting next to my mum and just talking to her the whole time. And it was kind of like, you know, I think for mum also, like, I don't know whether that was part of, you know, protecting the, you know, protecting her daughter, but it was also kind of protecting her a bit as well, because then she didn't have to step out. And, you know, from talking to my mum, you know, it's a bit generational. My grandma was also, you know, my mum talks about my grandma and says, you know, that you should dress in brown and green so you blend in with the trees. You know, don't ever wear anything bright colors because you'll stand out and people might notice you. Just wear brown and green and blend in with the trees. And so I think that, you know, like, part of it is, you know, the role that you play in your family. My sister is older than me. She was always super adventurous, got into lots of trouble because of that. And I think because of that, you know, I sort of was like, I could see that that was causing angst and anxiety and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, unconsciously you choose this role of, okay, well, I will be, you know, that good girl or the quiet one or whatever. And kind of took that and made it an Olympic sport.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, it's the programming of, I think it's partly genes, then possibly which family member you're drawn to, but also, obviously, as longer as you be with your family members, you possibly take on model behavior, what you learn from them, you know.
That's right.
It's really interesting. So how how do you help people today boosting their confidence, like out of your own learning, your own empathy to your own self? You can help young people or any kind of people to tell me about it.
Yeah, so I've got a whole range of different things that I do, from one-on-one coaching to group coaching and online courses and all kinds of different things. And it's all about helping people to understand the way that they tick, because you know, we're not provided with an instruction book. If only, you know, the book of us, like, that would be the most amazing thing ever, to help us understand why we do the weird and crazy shit that we do. And what's really interesting is that when you understand the code and you can understand what's actually going on behind and underneath, you know, the behavior patterns up here, you can understand what's going on with the thinking behind it. When you understand it, stuff starts making sense. And when stuff makes sense, you can start changing it. When you understand how things work in your own brain, in your own thinking, and in your own heart and soul, then you can start making change so easily. But when you kind of feel like everything is a mystery, I don't understand why I'm doing all of this random stuff, spoiler alert, nothing is random, then when you feel like you don't understand anything that's going on, it can just feel super overwhelming, and you get to the point where you just go, I just need to back out of everything and back out of the world. And you know, that becomes a really shitty and dangerous place to be living in, when nothing that you do makes sense. So helping people understand, you know, why they're doing the things that they're doing, helping them to make better decisions that are more ecological. So what do I mean by that? It means that, you know, you're thinking about what are the consequences of my decision, rather than just going, I'm not going to make a decision because it's all too hard. Oh, I have to make one, that. Rather than doing that, which a lot of us do, me too, I've done that before. You know, I teach people how to make really good, confident decisions in a process that's really simple, you know.
So how can I find out, how can I even find out my own behavior? You know, like, how do I even become aware of it? Like, how can you help me figuring this out?
Well, look, you know, I think it's kind of like anything, any behavior change, creating the awareness is step number one, right? Like, you even think about in like Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, step number one is actually recognizing that I am an alcoholic, right? And in that behavior change process, recognizing and taking a moment to actually, you know, turn off the Facebook, turn off TV, turn off Netflix, and just sit with yourself for a moment. It feels very scary at the beginning, you know, to sort of clear away the distractions of life and of everything that we use to stop us from connecting to who we actually are. And that was a scary thing for me too, to sort of stop and take stock of where I am in my life and what my thinking is and how that's impacted. But even some really simple things like, you know, for a lot of the people that I'm working with, I suggested them to get a rubber band and put it around their wrist. Nothing tight, like, let's keep the blood flowing, you know. But, you know, for a lot of people, they're super unaware of how negative and how ranty their self-talk is. So I get them to put a rubber band on their wrist, and every time they start noticing that they're going into ranty self-talk, I get them to like ping the rubber band. Not this, because we're not into self-harm. This is all about just creating awareness. So just a little snap on the rubber band to help you become aware and create awareness of how much and how ranty and how often those thoughts and that sort of, you know, negative self-talk is going on in your head. Because again, if you're not aware, how do you change it? And it's kind of like, you know, for people that come home and just flick on the TV, after a while, you don't even notice that it's on. And it's the same with our ranty self-talk. It's with us 24/7. It's, you know, there's no remote control to turn it off. And the ranting can get louder and louder and louder and louder and louder until you don't even realize that it's there, until it's like super, super, super ranty and super horrible and all that kind of thing. And just this simple tool of using a rubber band, we've all got access to them, can help you start creating that awareness. And then, like, I like to help people recognize, understand, and realize that they are the boss of themselves. And it's a really, really interesting thing for a lot of people to realize, and particularly a lot of young people. In the work I'm doing with young people, are, you know, somewhere throughout each session, we always kind of get to, you know, who's the boss of you? And I get them to point. And, you know, there's been some young people that have, you know, at the end of the session have kind of come back and said, you know, I really struggled when you asked who was the boss of me, and it was kind of like, oh, yeah, me. Because they were so used to outsourcing their power and the blame and the this and the that to everybody else. And part of, you know, adulting is learning that you're the boss of yourself. And that means that you are responsible for everything. And again, that's scary, but it also gives an opportunity for you being the boss of yourself to make different decisions.
Yeah, it's
amazing.
That
was a really long answer to a very short question.
No, but I think it's great, because it's also good giving some tools. If someone wants to start now and listens to this, you know, at least you can... I think, yeah, I could still do this with rubber band. I still think I'm telling myself every day.
It's
also to get to know yourself. I remember doing some meditation in several settings, and it's always a question about who am I? And I read the other day a sentence on, you know, we're born in this country, we're male or female, apparently, who knows, we are, I don't know, I have long hair, been white, black, whatever. And this is like the program we're living of what's like, yeah, but I'm German, so I'm just like this, you know? And there are these stereotypes that are always been told to you. And you kind of like, yeah, we are on time, and we might, like, we possibly are efficient, but there are also a lot of people in Germany that are not like this. And it's kind of interesting, because I think even in any kind of age, you can still ask yourself every morning, who am I? And you're possibly going to find always a different answer to the question. My friend was saying the other day, she puts 20 who am I's in the morning and writes, I am lovable, I am caring. And this is how she goes into her day. And I found this so powerful. So I think, like, sharing like your tools or any tools that help someone becoming a better person, specifically for themselves, because they're with them 24/7, but also with, you know, like for them around them as well, is such a great, it's so good to share this.
Yeah. And look, you know, that's just, you know, I think if you asked 1,000 people, you get 1,000 different answers to that question. What's one thing you can do? And, you know, it is about starting small, doing something that you can actually commit to, rather than, you know, New Year's resolution, I'm going to blah, 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 blah. And, you know, 2 weeks in, you go, oh, you know, I can't do it. I promised myself like that I was going to do this in one, you know, in 1 week or in 1 day. Starting small, creating those small changes in habits, You know, like as you said, meditation. I never thought that I would become a meditator. I don't know if that's a word, but you know, I never thought that I would meditate and be able to, you know, sit in a meditation for like an hour and it just the time go like this. And it didn't start in an hour. It started with 5 minutes of me going, what am I supposed to be thinking about? What am I supposed to be doing here? And, you know, and realizing that meditation can be as simple as just focusing on breathing in and breathing out. That's it. And, you know, we can do that anywhere.
Yeah.
Calming your mind, calming your soul, not emptying your brain, just calming it so that, you know, the innate wisdom that we have has got a space to actually come back up again, rise up and go, hey, I'm here.
Yeah.
Thanks for sort of inviting me back again.
What are your thoughts on accepting?
On accepting everything, anything, or
yeah,
on accepting, yeah. My thoughts on it are, it's a good thing.
Yeah,
it's a great thing. I mean,
I was just thinking because of the rubber band thing. I was thinking, you know, it's I found also you as maybe a child or a person, people might or family tells you, yeah, don't do this and don't do that and don't do that. And I found now with 38 that it's like, but why should I not be like this? Why should I not watch a movie and crocheting at the same time and doing, I don't know, a third thing if that's who I am and that's how my brain operates, you know? And I think yeah. I think this is has also such a big thing to really accepting yourself, because it's also good to change, but also to accept yourself of who you are as well. And yeah, so I was thinking that was kind of going good with this together. Plus meditating, I guess, is also accepting and accepting your surroundings also really good. So
I think that whole acceptance piece has got a lot to do with, you know, the judgments that we have on ourselves and on others and what we should and shouldn't. Ugh, two horrible words, right? And having that acceptance, it's like it gives you the space of beingness, you know, where you accept something. This is where you can just be. And so many of us have turned into, you know, human doings rather than human beings. And you know, putting judgment on everything and everybody, and just the weight and the density of that is so overwhelmingly horrible and debilitating for a lot of people, that this weight of, you know, judgment. Oh, and look, you know, I have done it myself. I continue to do it myself. My coach calls me on it a lot. And, you know, I mean, look, when I was a kid, there was, you know, three of us in high school and, you know, we were called the judges. Like, that's how judgy I was, right? Literally, we, you know, the kids in the school used to call us the judges, and we would kind of wear that as a badge of honor. And now I kind of look at it and go, oh, you know,
I don't think it was judgment. It was your less, because you were not confident in yourself. That's why you were looking outside. Or...
Totally, totally. Much easier to put judgment on other people than, you know, it's like that whole spotlight of when I was coaching. Yeah, this is to help everybody else, but actually, no, I need to turn that onto myself. And, you know, I think it's a really, you know, the world we live in with social media and being able to be anonymous and all that kind of stuff. It becomes really easy to be judgy because we can just be spurting out things to here, left, right, and center without actually turning that spotlight on ourselves and going, okay, so who am I being?
Yeah.
Who am I being? And, you know, when you start, there's a reason we don't do it, right? It's because oftentimes we don't like what we see and what we hear and what we know and what we feel when we start asking those questions of ourselves. which is exactly why I think I have a coach, because like I said, I won't ask myself those difficult questions. You know, we have that built-in protection mechanism of, you know, I don't want to ask myself the questions that I don't want to hear the answer to, because it's scary and it means I've got to look at actually what I am doing and who the person I am being. Much easier to just outwards rather than turning that onto yourself. Having said that, it is the most powerful thing that you can do.
Yeah, so pretty much confidence. So courage means you coming out of your comfort zone, pushing your boundaries and your comfort zone, and then coming into confidence. And then life can change to your full potential.
1,000%. Yeah. Yeah. And it's really interesting because, you know, I've been working with a coach for a number of years. And, you know, I'm not at my full potential at all. I don't think any of us are. You know, I just think that there's always another level or space or whatever that we can get to, in hoping to reach that sort of, you know, more full potential.
But when you talk about potential, what are you referring to? To becoming your truer self or reaching goals outside of yourself, or?
I think that they're both really strongly linked, because but it has to come from you first. Mm-hmm. If you are trying to get to goals that don't match with who you are as a person, it's either going to be you'll get there and feel really empty and kind of vacuous from it, because in nature and in ourselves we need to have balance. So if we're achieving stuff but we feel like we're actually not deserving of it, or we're not, you know, being the person that deserves this, then something's got to give. And unless we build ourselves up, then our business is going to go down, or whatever it is that we're trying to achieve is going to go down. And it's that space of, you know, it's a word that's overused, but authenticity, you know, where what you're doing and what you're being matches so beautifully together, and it is from a space of truth and honesty and integrity and, you know, all of those really great words that we aim for and hope for. And when you are building something, whether it is whatever it is that you want to achieve in your life, whether it's having a great family or a business or being an employee, whatever it is, unless you build you, the thing that you're trying to achieve is either going to be really taxing and difficult. And even when you get there, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like you own it, or you deserve it.
So I guess it's quite a journey to go on. And what do you think, why we think we don't deserve things?
Oh, that's a big question. look, you know, my mum's side of the family, and I don't know how many generations it's gone back. Mm-hmm. Even though we, you know, I wasn't told, you know, you're not good enough, there was that sense that sort of has gone through, like almost like through DNA. You know, I remember my grandma, you know, was working for some people who were quite wealthy, and they would sort of give her some stuff. And, you know, when she died, we found, you know, the good stuff in the cupboard, never used, you know, the good china, the good tablecloth, the good this, never used, because, well, there was never a good enough occasion, because the occasion had to match how she was feeling. And she never felt good enough, so therefore there was never an occasion that was good enough to use the good stuff that some other people who, you know, my grandma had put up on this pedestal because they were wealthy. There was just like this massive mismatch everywhere in the space of I'm not good enough. And, you know, I'd carried that as well through my life. And, you know, in learning to dump some of the old beliefs and patterns and shit that we kind of accumulate through our life, but also through, you know, the DNA of generations, you know, in liberating yourself from some of those patterns and beliefs, the lightness that you feel of being able to kind of, you know, cut those ties and the attachments to those old patterns and old beliefs is, it's phenomenal. It's, you know, that lightness, and it's that real ownership of being, of who you are, you know, without all the heaviness and yeah, these kind of cords that pull you down and you know, because you should get real.
Yeah, you really wonder who started the chain of telling people you are not good enough. The story.
I would like to go back and kind of give them a bit of a, you know, boof on the face. But, you know, throughout history, there has always been people who have wanted to have power and control. And, you know, a really good way of doing that is telling other people that I am all powerful and you are not.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I mean, it happens in relationships. You know, I was married to a guy who, you know, part of his process of whatever was, you know, reinforcing that for me, that I'm not good enough. And, you know, once you start believing it yourself and telling it to yourself, that becomes a really toxic situation. Because then, you know, your self-talk reflects it. Everything reflects, you know, that little insecurity you have gets kind of grown and grown and grown until it sort of takes up a whole lot of your space.
Yeah, it's true. I discovered this also on reflecting on my last relationships. And what I must have learned through my family is that looking after someone else and putting myself last, that's how I show someone my love. On losing myself in the path of being with them. And that was really, yeah, interesting to discover. I think I partly knew it before, but now it has been also, which is possibly also a woman generation behavior kind of pattern. But yeah, very interesting.
It's what's fascinating, I've found in my experience with me and with, you know, the clients I work with, is, you know, there are signposts to these things all the way through our life. And it's kind of like, you know, when at the first time you get it, it's like a little tickle on the neck with a feather. And then, you know, it's like a little scratch. And then it's sort of like, you know, somebody's sort of just doing that. And the slaps get harder and harder until you wake up. And yeah, it's kind of like this thing is going, it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until you create awareness of it and do something with it. Which is, you know, brings us right back to kind of almost the beginning when you were, you know, like the rubber band, you know, like having that awareness. Unless you have that, the experiences are going to get bigger and bigger and louder and stronger until you have that awareness and you do something with it.
Yeah, I feel intuition is also good to listen to, which possibly goes together with the rubber band, because I mean, if you're not aware that you're even doing those things and they actually not even seem to be to you negative or, yeah, literally not a good impact on your own person, then I think mostly your intuition tells you, but then we might have lost that also on the way of listening to it, which means then you're also not seeing red flags, which means you might, you know, yeah, it's,
which is kind of why we need to have somebody else external to us,
yeah, to reflect
that awareness,
yeah.
And you know, like you know, you said at one point, you know, where your parents or somebody says, oh no, you can't do that, or you should or you shouldn't do that. And all of those no you can'ts and don't trust yourself, trust me, it makes you lose faith in your own intuition. And so over time, we've been told not to trust ourselves, not to trust what we feel, trust what other people are telling us. And getting back to that space of trusting you, trusting what you're feeling, trusting what you're sensing and what you're seeing and all of those things, takes time to relearn to trust that you can trust yourself. And it's worth doing. It's worth doing. I know, like with the decision-making workshop that I run, the process that I teach people is a very cerebral brain-based process. And I always, at the end of the workshop, talk to people about start using the brain to go through the process, but then check in with your intuition. And over time, kind of do this. So rather than it being solely a brain, you know, a brain process, lessen the brain and build your intuition. But it has to be in a process.
Working off the layers.
Yeah, because for so many years and generations and centuries probably, we've been taught, don't trust yourself, trust somebody else. Trust this person in power. Trust this one. Trust doctors. Trust everybody except yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so having a process to go through with decision making and then using your intuition as a check, as an extra checking point, and then over time, reducing the this and connecting more to the this.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah. I know. Amazing. We could talk forever.
Yeah, maybe you can, is there like a message you want to get out into the world that you would like everyone to hear?
I think the most appropriate and the most appropriate message for the time that we are in now is be love. Be love. And the reason I say that is because love is the antidote to fear. There is a lot of fear in the world. There is a lot of fear in people's hearts and souls and minds. And so connecting to love, and if love feels a bit overwhelming and strange and hard, connect to gratitude, connect to other different forms of love, like gratitude. But love is the antidote to fear. You cannot have love and fear in the same place at the same time. In every moment, you can choose love. And because we are the boss of ourselves, we get to choose love or fear in every moment. The more we choose love, the less space there is for fear.
And so how does love feel? How can we practice love? Do you have
in
some
any way that, and that's what I'm saying, like for some
connecting
people, the word love is a bit big and overwhelming. So it may be through gratitude, it may be through giving, it may be through all kinds of different ways. It may be love can be even be, you know, patting your dog. Like it can be the most simple thing. It can be, you know, having that conversation with somebody that you just meet, or helping, you know, an old lady with their trolley, you know, getting off the tram, helping somebody, being of service is a form of love.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever that is for you, in whatever form that you can do it, do it.
Yeah, I'm just asking because I think there are also a lot of people that might never have experienced this. And, you know, I think like two words like letting go or forgiveness and love, sometimes you really need, if you haven't experienced this or you don't know how to do it, it's good to get some ideas of, you know, like what you can do. And for example, yeah, love to feel this maybe the first time doesn't necessarily need to be with another person, but maybe this, yeah, of like writing down what you're thankful for, or yeah, even like you're talking to someone in a shop to have a connection with someone, or asking how they're going, and yeah, so smiling, or helping your neighbor. Yeah,
that's it, smiling at somebody. Or like there's about 1,000 different ways that you can show love to somebody else and or yourself, right? Yes. Taking a moment to stop and breathe and be grateful for whatever is an expression of love. And the more that we can do that, the more we can focus on that, the more we can, you know, put out into the world what it is that we want to see, you know, be the world that you want to live in. The more that we can do that, the more power that has, rather than fear.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for this interview.
You're so welcome. Sure, thank you.
I'm sure a lot of people can take a lot of messages from this, and I will put your homepage and your contact details in the show notes. But also amazing that you have a sign in the background, which we have seen now for nearly an hour. So everyone that hasn't seen this, they can contact you under this homepage address. Lovely. Well, thanks so much, and have a lovely day. And lots of love to you.
Be well and be love. Bye.
Yes, bye.